Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle keep popping that water, man.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel Live from sunny Orlando, Florida. I am Nick Roush, joined by our good pal, Adam Luckett. We are 9 floors up at the lovely Rosen Plaza Hotel, overlooking where the pep rally is going to be tomorrow, Luckett. And I know you've got to be fired up to be here.
The Point is where you can find the pep rally tomorrow for the Citrus Bowl. But yeah, just now getting here Thursday afternoon, Nick. You've been here for, 3 days now?
Yeah. Tuesday. Yeah.
So Nick's been holding it down. He got in traffic in Atlanta, just like I think everybody else coming down.
Everybody
here.
Else in America. I did have a long conversation with Chris Rodriguez afterwards, though, about not only thanking him for getting to McDonough, but he also has highly recommended Bucky's, the gas station. That's a mall, basically.
My father-in-law has found out about Bucky's, and you would think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
So, those are two great recommendations right there. Chris Rodriguez and Florida Doug. Yeah.
I told my wife, Taylor, we'll probably have to stop at Bucky's at some point on the way back to the Ville on Sunday. But yeah, the weather is beautiful.
Yeah.
Couldn't ask for anything better. I haven't been here too long yet, but I got a feeling there's probably going to be a strong Kentucky contingent down here.
I wasn't sure about it right away, but on Tuesday, of course, there weren't that many Kentucky fans down here. But as the game's gotten closer, I've seen more and more. Watched some basketball action with Wildcat fans last night. Watched Kentucky beat down on Missouri at the old Roof of 10. Ran into your family, and man, it was a trip. I gotta tell one Florida Doug story. You can't tell a lot of Florida Doug stories on 11 Personnel, but there was a moment last night where he was kind of busting my chops. Where's your UK stuff, man? I'm like, listen, Doug, we're objective journalists, you know. We gotta have our just normal, regular clothes. You know, I just had on like a navy blue polo. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, that's what Adam wanted for Christmas. He just wanted some of those H shirts. I'm like, H? He's like, yeah, you know those shirts with the H on them. Your cousin's like, what? Haggard? No, that's not it. Tommy Hilfiger? I'm like, H? I can't think of it. Well, you got it on your shirt right there. It was the Under Armour logo. Fairness, the U and the A, it kind of looks like an H.
I'm looking at it right now.
I was dying laughing. It was a great time. More good times are going to be had down here on International Drive. The Denny's, though, you just good luck trying to get into one of those places. They're packed.
Yeah, I always tell people from 2018 trip down here that this is like if Mars opened tomorrow and America wanted their little stake in Mars where Martians would come and want to see what America's like, it would be International Drive. Chain restaurants.
Yep.
Out the wazoo. Every chain you could think of. Big hotels everywhere.
Oh, lots of gimmicky stuff too. And we have an upside down thing. I don't even know what you call it.
You got a Ferris wheel there in the background.
Uh-huh. They have the slingshot thing.
What looks to be the St. Louis Arch out there. I'm not sure what that is.
Topgolf.
Topgolf.
Yep, yep. I know it's hard on your eyes at night because the lights are so bright. I've had trouble sleeping.
Poor Oxmoor folks have been shaking in their California Kings over there worrying about Topgolf. But great pedestrian traffic. You can get to a lot of places on foot.
Yes.
Short 10-minute drive to the stadium.
Yes.
So for as a bowl site, if you're looking for local flavor,
yeah, that
local middle of Florida flavor, you're not really going to get this. This is very tourist central. But everything other than that, it has everything you want to have. You have bars, bunch of restaurants. You can get everywhere on foot. There's a central location, so you're going to be around
yeah.
a lot of Kentucky fans. That's going to be a good time down here.
That's one thing that is nice, is it's walking distance to a lot of stuff. I did get at least one. Well, if you want a local spot, our pal Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South said that I hope you get to check out Chicken Fire and or Gideon's Cookies at East End Market. So there's two local places. They do exist in Orlando. At least two local places. But we'll be out and about on International Drive having a good time ahead of this game. It's going to be a little bit of fun on Thursday and Friday, but the fun has ended for the Kentucky football team. They were at Universal earlier this week. They had an outing this morning with Iowa where they took kids to a little amusement park. Will Levis was holding a gator. So that was their last official bowl outing, though. Between all that, like the fun stops, and now they're getting back into the normal kind of game week grind where when you're not practicing, you're doing fun stuff. Now it's, okay, walkthrough, team dinner, meetings, you know, stuff like that. So we're getting back into the swing of things. Mark Stoops will have a press conference Friday morning. And he's got a few absences or potential absences to address, Lockett. How do you think Stoops will handle that potential news?
We'll see. Which is not the surprise absences has been a thing during bowl season. There's been a few games late. Missouri comes to mind. Drinkwitz.
They had a ton. Like
the day before.
Like 14?
In like five starters.
Yeah.
There's been a few others like that.
Purdue right now. No David Bell. No Carl Loftus. Mm-hmm. No Melton Wright. Virginia which I Tech, may or no may Tate not have Robinson. Known early on.
No Braxton Burmeister. No Trey Turner, which was pretty much their entire offense.
Yeah.
And played out there in the Pinstripe Bowl. So, yeah, there's been a few instances like that. It's going to be interesting to see, and it's probably going to go both ways. I mean, Iowa might have a couple that we don't know about.
That's true. The two big ones for UK right now, or at least the three that I've got to keep my eye on, is Josh Pascal. Is he there? Is he not there? Kind of, we played that little saga this week where he was not at practice on Tuesday. Then he showed up to practice on Wednesday. Still didn't, I don't know, he didn't look like normal explosive Josh Pascal. I think the effects of that injury are lingering. He looks normal walking around, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be like. Maybe he dresses and tries to play a little bit, but some, you know.
It might be a thing where they let him dress, but he doesn't play.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they did with McCall against Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. Could be something very similar because they don't want to jeopardize his future. Jaquez Jones this week, he was in a walking boot some, and I was like, man, I'm surprised to see that. And then UK actually tweeted it out. I wasn't going to be that guy because I hate walking boot hysteria. PJ Washington wore me out with walking boot hysteria. So that's something we've got to keep an eye on. And then another player that I did not see dress for practice on Wednesday was Dare Rosenthal. So, just something to monitor.
On Jaquez Jones, we went to an open practice over the summer, like 2 weeks before the first game, and he was in a walking boot, not doing anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Turns around first game. I think that was really an issue, and then he was able to turn around and play, even though he missed a lot of practice time there in fall camp. So that could just, it could be precautionary.
Yeah, oh yeah, like and that. That's usually what stuff like that
and
is.
And the Rosenthal thing, who knows, he might have ate some bad sushi down here.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to wait. You know, it's definitely going to be a we'll see. We'll have to wait and see. But this is kind of the bowl games. You never know. Michigan had a thing today where one of their best defensive players, Daxton Hill.
Yeah, he didn't make the trip.
He didn't make the trip, and Harbaugh said it's questionable for the game, so you don't know what's going on there with him.
I love that they reported whatever the newspaper there.
Right.
Report Free Press, I think. Yeah, they reported that he's not there. But then Harbaugh's just, he's questionable. Well, is he questionable to make it, or is he questionable to play? We don't know. Oh, we do know that Purdue is in scoring range right now, second two near the goal line.
Because you're not live, 21-7 here in second quarter, 14 minutes left. Purdue has moved the ball.
Yeah.
Cousin Jeff has got the play sheets working today.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we got here, but could be a shootout there brewing. In
I did emotionally hedge more substantially than I should have.
Just to have the ride.
Yeah, but like I suck so bad. Double pass. Oh, he's throwing double it out coverage, of end zone.
Great catch, but out of bounds.
Yeah, man, this is fun. We were actually contemplating doing a Twitter Spaces for this podcast. But I'm admittedly scared to try new technology for the first time in a big spot. So
tell me you're 30 without telling me you're 30.
Yeah, another tell me you're 30 without telling me you're 30. I hung up my clothes when I arrived in Orlando. That's a very adult thing to do, is to put hang your clothes in the closet.
That's funny, because we stayed in Jacksonville area with my in-laws the last few days. I believe on Wednesday we didn't unpack anything from a suitcase, and I was getting a little upset. I was like, "Taylor, we should have organized this." As we're trying to find clothes. One of those moments where you're like, "God, it's like the Progressive commercials." You start sounding.
Oh
like
gosh, yeah. Oh, those are great commercials too. They can keep those going as long as they want. I want to briefly mention a couple of bowl games that already happened. South Carolina, they're going to be SEC champions in 2022 after winning the Mayo Bowl. I think that's the natural progression. There, it's going to be nauseating the amount of South Carolina buzz we're going to hear this offseason.
I almost texted you this today. I was like, I really hope not. I really would need North Carolina to win this game.
God, just the Shane Beamer. Because the media already loves Shane Beamer.
Yeah.
You know, like just the way he is in interviews, his dad, like he checks all the boxes. You pile this on, just, it's going to be gross.
Yeah, so just get ready
for
that. But first SEC win.
Yeah.
Mike Leach took it on the absolute chin. That was the most.
Should have known that was coming, too, because that's what he does.
Mississippi State just had the most Mike Leach season ever. They open up a bad Louisiana Tech team, need a crazy fourth quarter comeback to beat them. They smash Kentucky and NC State at home.
Yeah, but top 25 teams.
Then they lose to an LSU team that they were much better than them, kind of the same way they lost to Ole Miss. Dominated the game, created more scoring opportunities, but just couldn't finish drives.
Mm-hmm.
They go and win at Texas A&M, who like a week or two later, beats Alabama at home.
Oh, they also lost a rivalry game.
Yeah, lost a rivalry. Big surprise. And they also lost to Arkansas because a kicker couldn't make a kick. They missed like four field goals. So, and then they ended in the Liberty Bowl against a team they're better than.
And just get smashed.
Walloped.
God.
And they finished the season 7-6. Peaks and valleys. That's what you signed up for.
Man. There's some big peaks and some low valleys. low valleys in there. But it does mean more. We have SEC teams now winning bowl games. There's a college football playoff happening tomorrow that I know folks are excited to watch. I'm just nervous that I might overindulge because we got an early, long day at Camping World Stadium on Saturday. A few just heads up for folks that will be down in Orlando. 4:45 on New Year's Eve is when the pep rally is happening. It's at Point Orlando, as we mentioned earlier. It's a nice setup there. Basically, you just miss the first half of the first playoff game. Then go watch the rest of the games. Call in early. Turn in early, I should say, because it's going to be an early morning down at the stadium. 9 a.m. is when they have an unofficial tailgate area set up where they got activities for the kids, all that sort of stuff. You can buy food and beer and all that. You can tailgate without having to set up a tailgate. But the catwalk is at 10:45. It's at the same spot it was last year, or the last go around, on the southeast corner of the stadium, by Gate C on a map. I think it's off Rio Grande Avenue. So I've tried to give you as many directional points. It is opposite of where the baseball field is and all that sort of stuff. But I like that they used the picture of Josh Allen to promote the catwalk at 10:45 because it made me think, wait, Josh Allen coming back? Bring him back? Round two?
The real Josh Allen.
The real Josh Allen. And, you know, one thing that I think is consistent with the real Josh Allen's team going into this game is the way that they've prepared for it in the energy that they're putting forth in practice. I don't think we got the same level of smack talk from James Franklin that we're getting from Iowa, but you did have that one thing, you know.
The pep rally. Or was it at the press conference? Or there was even, Franklin said something.
Yeah.
You're talking about Iowa.
I'm talking about Iowa now.
Yeah. My brain was going back to
You went back to Franklin talking about the real blue and white. And it is almost as innocuous as that was, where they said, well, how many bowl, I haven't been to a bowl game in how long? So what does Bully McCall do? He wears all of his bowl rings to a bowl outing this morning, which which is also, who takes their bowl rings with them to the bowl game? I guess he was ready to put all four of them on. Thinking of
Instagram ahead of time.
Just
get one more.
Gotta be. So you've got the trash talk aspect. You've got the folks fired up aspect at practice. Look, it's a nice storm brewing right now for the Kentucky football team entering the Citrus Bowl.
A lot of momentum, it seems like, for the Wildcats. Just hammer your rival.
Yeah.
Rival goes in a tailspin. You sign your best recruiting class ever. Seems like most of your guys are going to play in this game. You're avoiding the opt-outs. You're playing a team that I think you feel pretty good with how you match up with them. A lot of positive vibes.
Yes.
Point of their direction. Now, bowl season gets wonky. It's the most non-played games played on paper. Like, on paper, this should happen. And then the opposite tends to happen in bowl season.
South Carolina, North Carolina, right, for example.
So there's always that variable. Texas Tech, Mississippi State, perfect example of that. But that tends to go away. The better the games get.
Yeah.
Right, or the better matchups, better teams are. And so we should be in for a fun football game.
When
Tennessee getting a little gadget play.
Tennessee did the Kendon Hooker, like, I'm looking at the sideline, and then they snap it to the running back.
Direct snap action.
Yeah.
But, they did the tackle stand that stood up, too.
Yeah.
But when you start digging into this, there's just a lot of things, I think, going Kentucky's direction. Especially Iowa kind of limped in to end the season.
Yeah.
Where Kentucky kind of, now they feasted on some bad opponents. Some that couldn't even beat an Air Force team. So they pounded teams.
Yeah.
And that's something we've seen Mark Stoops teams kind of struggle with.
Yeah. No. You're exactly right. I always joke too at the beginning of the year, what game was it where they didn't cover a big number? I guess it was Vanderbilt where they didn't cover. And people were a little like, I don't know.
31-3, Vanderbilt game. And I get the gist that Clark Lee and Stoops probably like each other.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly hired Matt House. Brian Kelly's old DC was Clark Lee. Kind of similar structure, similar beliefs in how the game should be played.
Right.
Defensive coordinator.
We're going to do things the right way here. You know, yeah.
You know, we joke about Vanderbilt, but they are putting more of an emphasis in recruiting. Clark Lee, for fun, they hired him. A lot for fundraising, kind of similar to how Kentucky hired Stoops.
Yeah,
so
they're investing a lot over there. So, that you know. And I think you could say the same thing about Stoops with this Iowa program where, the Penn State game. What was the score to that when Kentucky put their foot off the gas? It was like 24-7, I want to say.
Yeah, it was either 24-7 or 27-7. I think it was 24-7.
And
then it came 27-14, and then Penn State scored two more times before Kentucky was able to run out the clock.
Right. It just kind of, it's like, all right, let's just get out of here with the win. I think you could see a similar scenario in this game. The difference is, And, you know, I hate to beat the dead horse, but there's two big talking points when you talk about this game. Is one, Iowa's offense stinks. Two, Kentucky's offense has turned it over a ton, and Iowa forces turnovers.
Yeah, that's a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, like that. That's like the it is just – and you have to mention it. It goes – like it is what's going to define this game. But if you're in one of those where – okay, you get a 10-14-point lead if you're Kentucky and you want to sit on it. Iowa doesn't have the guys. They just don't have the players on offense to be able to overcome a big lead, a big deficit. They just don't. There's not like their best players on offense is what? Their tight end? No, it's their center. Their center is their best player. Like that's where we are with this Iowa offense.
A lot of bad for Iowa on offense this year. They got some young guys at receiver, Keegan Johnson, Arlen Bruce IV, that they've had to start pretty much as true freshmen. 2 4-star recruits, but this is what have been like Kentucky starting Chris Lewis this year, Dekel Crowdis. It's kind of that level of recruit, like a good recruiting win, but it's not necessarily players that are ready to go from the jump. So they're leaning on them. Their running back's out, Tyler Goodson, but even he was pretty inefficient. They're not efficient in the run game. They get behind the chains. And then passing-wise, Spencer Petras is a statue in the pocket. He takes a lot of sacks. He's not accurate with the football. Right around 55% completion rate. Most of his completions aren't good completions. Doesn't create a lot of explosive plays. They really struggle on offense.
And even the guy that they put in for him, Alex Padilla,
he was even worse.
Yeah, 50%. And you could say that, well, he's a better runner, but like that's very relative.
Right, and he's not like that.
It's not like DeCarrion Joyner for South Carolina coming in to just go, you know.
And so, it's just a lot of bad. I mean, they played 11 Power 5 teams, 9 games, offensive scored 2 touchdowns or less.
It's bad.
They struggle to score. When they get scoring opportunities, they struggle to put the ball in the end zone. They're not afraid to get to conservative. They want to win the field position game, and they're just going to lean on their defense and kicking game to win. Their offense just doesn't want to mess it up.
Yes.
We're kind of at the point you're at.
And they want to flip the field.
And like you're talking like you're talking about, if they get behind, they're not built to do anything. And that's exactly what happened in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah.
Michigan hit a couple explosives there in the first half, got a lead, and then it was just – you could just – with each possession, it just slowly started to slip away.
Whoa.
And then the onslaught came in the second half when everything snowballed on them, and it turned into the huge blowout that it was.
And – this is also, I think, a big game for Liam Cohen to kind of validate the progress that they've made over the second part of the season. And I think he's going to go for the jugular early. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to take a couple shots just to test him, you know? Because I think they're going to be able to get that underneath stuff whenever they want.
Yeah, the thing with Iowa is, like, you're going to get a lot of 2-deep safety looks. So that's something Kentucky got a lot of against Georgia, but Georgia plays man coverage where they could, and their front just controls the game. Iowa kind of asked their front to do the same, but they're playing zone in the back end. So they got all eyes on the football. But their front does a great job of kind of holding blocks, disengaging, keeping linebackers free. Their linebackers don't miss tackles. But if you play with a light box against Kentucky, they've been able to run the ball on everybody except Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Mississippi State, they got away from the run very early in that game, and there was a weird Chris Rodriguez stuff going on. If you're committed to running the ball with Rodriguez and Levis, you're going to be able to consistently, I think, move the ball, get the change. You're maybe not going to have the big chunk plays. You're going to sometimes find yourself in 3rd and 8, but consistently that's going to be a successive formula for you. Then you have to worry about with Iowa, they're so good in the back end, and they're so well coached that they just, any mistake, tip balls, they find them. They're very good at kind of...
I mean, they have 24 interceptions this year, yeah, for crying out loud.
They're very good at matching. Like, they know what the weaknesses of their zone are, and they're very good at adjusting and playing some match coverage to where you can't just pick apart the same zones over and over and over.
Right.
A lot more bad tends to happen than good when you throw the ball against Iowa. Their pass rush isn't great, but... it's a lot of you have to take dink and dunk. So you can't be afraid to take the profits in this game. It's going to be hard to hit bombs against Iowa. Like, you just kind of got to stay patient, stay true to who you are, run the football. Don't be afraid to play field position either if you're Kentucky. Get a few first downs and punt, because if Iowa can't move the ball, you might get the ball right back in good spot. And so that's really what this game is about. It kind of is.
Ooh, big play, Purdue.
Both teams.
Let's go.
Come the Boilers hanging in there. Both teams are kind of have a similar strategy. They go about it in different ways. Mm-hmm. Kentucky's just much better on offense. I think if you ask current parents in a private room, he would want the offense maybe to look a little bit more something like what Kentucky has.
Yeah. And I hate doing podcast overlap, but it's just naturally going to happen. Freddie made the point, this Iowa team's a lot like last year's Kentucky team. I'm like, man, yeah, they are, you know.
Bunch of interceptions.
Yeah, opportunistic
can't
as hell.
Can't pass the ball.
Yeah, I mean.
The only thing I would say, Kentucky's running game was better.
Yes, yes.
And I would say Iowa's defense was a little better. But yeah, I mean, they're pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm interested the way you articulated how to attack Iowa's defense, though. It still sets up like that's kind of in Levis's breadbasket, in Kentucky's breadbasket. I mean, you get to throw like what 15-yard square routes to Wandell.
And don't be afraid to run the ball with Levis either in this game.
Yeah,
like the combination of Rodriguez and Levis running the ball. I mean, I would like to see it get close to 32, 33 attempts from that twosome.
Yeah.
Get 22, 23 from Rodriguez. Get about 11, yeah. 12 from Levis.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the ticket to this game. And then Dinkin and Duncan. We've seen in the past receivers like Wandell Robinson, Iowa's had issues with.
David Bell. David Bell tore him
sticks
up.
Sticks out. Yeah. Some Michigan guys that are short and shifty were able to do some things. So Robinson really in that intermediate to underneath area, getting in those zones and kind of sitting down and Levis putting the ball on him. Is going to be big in this game.
You know what else is going to be big like it?
What's that?
We'll find out right after this. Like it, one thing that we mentioned when this game was set up, but we haven't really, you know, we've kind of drifted away, is the emotional aspect of it. And not only from Mark Stoops, but there's a lot of guys on this Kentucky football team where this game means a lot. This is Wandell Robinson's first bowl game. He's never played in one. Kenneth Horsey, this dude, the last time he was down here in Florida, playing 30 minutes, I mean, it's almost exactly 30 miles or a 30-minute drive from his high school.
Sanford.
Yeah, Sanford, just right down the road. He'd had open heart surgery 8 months before. And John Schlarman told him to keep working. And you'll get there. And you know what? He's back now. He's getting there. John Sumrall, coaching in his final game for Kentucky. He was fighting back tears talking about getting to coach DeAndre Square one more time. It's tried and trite to discuss just, well, how much do the bowl games mean? Blah, 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 blah. But like, you don't have to question that with this Kentucky football team entering the Citrus Bowl. They want to be there. There's no doubt about it. They have a lot to play for another 10-win season.
That last part, to me, is a big key. 10 hits a lot different than 9. Getting that double-digit win season, mm-hmm. second in 4 years. I think that plays a big part in it. I think also Kentucky, like, it feels like there was kind of a precedent set by Josh Allen.
Yes.
Even Benny Snell, I think he could, but he was going after the rushing record, so he's probably wanting to play in that game regardless. But Josh Allen really had he didn't.
Yeah.
Of all the opt-outs, potentially.
Right.
That was a prime candidate for one.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't opt out. And it's kind of stuck that, I mean, Lynn could have opted out, was just playing in the Belk Bowl. He had done enough, saved their season.
Yep.
He played, so it's kind of like, at Kentucky, this is kind of what they do.
We care about these games.
Well, it's also a sign, too, I just think of the overall health of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a sign that players like each other. They like being around each other.
Yeah.
They like being around the coaches. They, you know, newsflash. Breaking news, football players like to play football. And so I think there's a lot of kind of that to that. And I think it all adds up. It doesn't hurt that you're in a good bowl game either.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a big bowl game. You're playing the team that just played for the Big Ten Championship. Again, chance for 10 wins, chance to finish ranked. all that. I think all that adds up to what we're kind of seeing play out.
Yeah, and if you recall, too, like, Josh Allen didn't just play in the bowl game. Like, he played awesome. He blocked a field goal, had three sacks, and one of them was a big third down, if I'm not mistaken, too. Like, a pretty crucial moment. And you mentioned Lynn Bowden, too. There's been some pretty signature bowl moments. I think last year's might be the only one where there's not, like, a one... Like, really, the first thing that comes to mind is Brandon Echols doing the CPR thing.
Yeah.
Because, and it kind of exemplifies that game, almost, where they kind of clowned NC State. But I think, for the most part, in these bowl wins, there's been those moments. What do you think the big bowl moment could be this go-around in the Citrus Bowl?
That's a great question. Maybe, like, is this the game Kentucky finally gets, like, a tip ball interception? Finally gets a big interception, maybe, like, well, they've had two pick sixes already, even with the lack of interception.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Is that the game we get that?
There's almost certainly going to be a big Wandale Robinson play.
Yeah.
You can set your watch to it.
Maybe on punt return?
Especially, I was doing some research, like, it in two games against Iowa and Nebraska, he had 9 receptions and 9 rushes. 0 receptions as a true freshman against them. Just carries. Might have a little, you know, something for him. I ultimately think that this feels like a great jumping off point for Will Levis.
Yeah, that was kind of
like, I don't know if we're going to get 1, 2, 3, 4 counting him in the end zone, but there's going to be something. He was
30 for 260 just against maybe 3 touchdown passes against what might be the best pass defense outside of Georgia,
yeah,
in the country.
What and the thing is you mentioned to it earlier that even though it's probably running the ball might be a better, easier path to success, I don't think it's going to be we're hurtling over somebody. I think he's going to throw up a pre-pass into the end zone, like a 32-yard, maybe not a fade, but one of those precise, like
Isaiah Cummings.
You got it. You have to hit it at this perfect spot with hands coming across. And that's the difference between winning, not only winning and losing, but also winning and really jumping into the offseason full steam ahead.
Yeah, you look at these bowl games like it's a way to prop up, build momentum for next season. We talked about South Carolina already. It's a great chance for Kentucky and kind of the Levis hype train.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. A few years ago, Terry Wilson entered this game. Been a couple good games together. Felt like a moment for him playing a good defense. If he could come out and have a good game, that'd be really something, kind of a launching point. And he didn't really have all that great of a game. Kentucky won, kind of getting nothing from the quarterback position.
Yeah.
The big passes they hit were screens where Bolden was just catch and run.
Yeah.
For Levis, can you do it against a good defense? If he can have a big game, that could be a very big kind of trampoline into next year. So that's definitely something to see. I think for a guy like Isaiah Cummings,
yeah,
we talked about, he's going to play a lot in this game. If he could have, you know, 6 catches for 57 yards.
Touchdown.
And have, like, a big moment in this game, that could be a launch point for him. And defensively, too, for some younger guys. Does Trevin Wallace get in? If he plays for Jaquez Jones, does he make a bunch of big plays, potentially?
Right.
At safety, Jalen Geiger, maybe. Carrington Valentine, does he get his first career interception?
Right.
Stuff like that. Those are the things I think to create our off-season content.
Yes.
Stuff we'll talk about.
Please do this for our jobs. Make our jobs easier.
Right. Well, a lot of that's created in the bowl game. So
yeah.
If something like that can happen, you know, you could look and be pretty excited. Kenneth Orsia, if he plays left tackle, what does that look like for Darryl Rosenthal?
Yeah.
Things like that, I think, are different areas I think we'll be watching to see if kind of there's like a splashy performance to kind of lead into next season.
Right. I'm trying to recall what game it was. Zayden Cummings have a pretty big, like a good contested touchdown catch.
It was Vanderbilt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having one of those would be nice.
And then Tennessee, too. He had a huge game against Tennessee. That was probably his best game today, was against Tennessee.
So building on that, Keaton Upshaw is down here. He's a people forget about kind of guy, but he's back to running around some. It was good to see him out there. You know, he's not doing any contact by any means, but good to see him out there. Tashaun Manning. Tashaun Manning's built. He's a big boy.
He's not a small human being.
No. Right. He's a big boy. So good to get that vibe. I know, hell, we got another future Wildcat in town too. Tyrese Fearbree is playing in this weekend's Under Armour All-American game. They're playing that at Camping World Stadium the day after.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So they're running back. We got a ton of guys from 0-3, the national recruiting writers down here. Chad Simmons, Jeremy Crabtree, Jerry Hamilton. So a lot of folks with eyes and ears on that game. What's funny, Lucky? So Cheez-It Bowl was last night. Iowa State, Clemson. Brock Purdy, hilarious way to end a football game. Like, if you don't love bowl season, have a quarterback run for a first down on 4th and 2, then fumble it backwards and fall on it to not get the first down.
The pick six interception was even a more hilarious
outplay. So he got the ball tipped. It came back to him. And instead of catching it, he tried to tip it forward. He like swatted it. Some
people said he tried to bat it down, but there was a receiver out there. I think he was literally trying to bat it to that receiver.
It looked like he was volleyball spiking it to him.
Yeah, that was. It was like almost like in basketball on a fast break, like the little push pass.
Yeah, man, that was
push that pass,
and he pushed it just directly to the other team.
The quarterback pick six the other way. That was something.
Well, the Cheez-It Bowl,
which was kind of a microcosm of Brock Purdy's career and the Iowa State season. So close, yet so far away. And I tweeted out last night, will we still see Matt Campbell ahead of Mark Stoops?
On those. Coach top 25. Right. Man, so funny. It was cool, though, after the game. I'd never seen this before, but Scott Docterman, who covers Iowa for The Athletic, he was covering Iowa State, and he showed a picture of them hosing down the end zone.
Got to get them ready
for it. And that's how you get rid of the paint. I didn't know how that worked. I guess it's just water-soluble stuff. What if it rains? Does it just bleed everywhere? I guess it's got to be a lot of water. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
But it was kind of weird. You could see like half of the Iowa State going away while they're getting set up for Kentucky-Iowa.
Well, like the Tebow game against Florida State when he had all that red paint on him.
Oh, man.
Maybe that was just from a lot of rain. So the paint started. There's that famous picture of Tebow where he's yelling. Yeah. He's got half his from half, the right side down is just covered in like.
Hendon Hooker's got it right now. He's got white paint all over him, and he just missed. It was 4th and 9, and he had a dude wide open in the end zone for like a 40-yard touchdown.
Purdue hanging in there.
Yeah, Purdue hanging around better than expected. We just can't have Tennessee win and not cover. You either win and cover or you lose.
Yeah.
You know, in between. We cannot have them winning by 7 points here or less. That would just be a travesty to all that is good in the world. Speaking of everything that's good in the world, Chris Rodriguez. Is this going to be like the quietest 1,500-yard season out there? What's he at right now?
1,272, so 1,300. Maybe 1,400.
So he could, I mean, yeah, if he had like a $150, he could get to.
He'd be at 1,400, over 1,400.
Is this going to be the quietest 1,400-yard season ever?
And if he got, he's 2 touchdowns away from 10. Yeah, you could have a 1,410 season.
I mean.
And we heard Liam Cohen talk about how he just doesn't lose yards. And he's just efficient, which we've talked about. He's an efficiency monster. He gets you ahead of the chains consistently. When you break down running backs, like people may have preferred Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker, guys who can create more big chunk plays. Those
explosives, yeah.
Well, you're getting 2nd and 9, 2nd and 11s, 3rd and 7s more when you hand them the ball. With Rodriguez, you're not getting that. He's been able to do that against pretty much everybody except Georgia this year. Chattanooga was the one weird game where he really couldn't get going. But other than that, it's been really, really good. And he had a great game against Louisville.
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of slowly chipping away. He hasn't had like a real workhorse game. His carries Tennessee had 22 carries, but a lot of that was due because they had 100-some plays.
Yeah.
You know, it's Vanderbilt 16, New Mexico State 16. Before that, he went up 27 against Missouri, 26 against South Carolina. Going back to kind of how I think Kentucky has to attack, I think it could be kind of a 25-26 carry game for him.
it kind of reminds me of the way Oscar Tshiebwe rebounds, where you expect it, and then you look up with 10 minutes left in the game, and you're like, God, he's got 16 rebounds right now? Like, when did that happen? That's kind of how it feels like with Chris Rodriguez, where it's just like, well, he's not getting tackled for loss. It's second and six. Tackled for granted. Yeah, you know, you really do. And I think part of it, too, is that he hasn't had as many as explosive touchdowns this year. It took until November for him to really get one of those big 35, you know, plus yard kind of touchdown plays. But that's going to be something that you're not going to be taking for granted against this Iowa defense that is very stout in the trenches. And I'm curious if Iowa thinks that they can play with light boxes in there.
That's what they do. They don't vary from what they do.
But, man,
they are who they are.
But they did say, like, you know, they're really good.
He might sneak that free safety in the box more. You might see him go to maybe some cover one.
Creep up a little bit.
Right, yeah. But they do what they do. Now, one thing, they can run an old 4-3 front. Like, at their Sam linebacker position, Dane Belton's like a safety. He's kind of their wild card. They'll move him all over the place, play him in the box some, play him deep safety, play strong safety, kind of move him in places. But then he rotates with Justin Jacobs, who's a 235-pound traditional 4-3 Sam linebacker. Mm-hmm. So they can get pretty big. Specifically at the linebacker position. They're not huge at the line of scrimmage, and they're not small, but they're not huge. But specifically at linebacker, they can get pretty big, and where those guys can take on blocks and they make tackles. You go backwards when you hit them. They got some wood splitters with Jack Campbell, Seth Benson.
Wood splitter, that's a freaking great football
term. Here's what I mean by Rodriguez. Of the running backs I've charted this year, with over 200 carries. So you're looking at 200 carries there, Nick. That's anywhere between, let's see here.
200 carries is
a lot. You're looking at 17 to 22 carries a game. So that's, in modern-day football, that's workhorse back, I would categorize. So Rodriguez leads them all with a 54.6% success rate. The next one I've charted is Sean Tucker at Syracuse, 47.6%. Brian Robinson at Alabama, 47.1% on 223.
I mean, he's significantly ahead.
The kid at LSU, Tyrion Davis Price, 45% on 211. Tyler Beatty, 44.4 on 268, which that he got 268 on his frame is a lot of work for him. Let's see here. Tank Bigsby.
And that doesn't count all the receptions he had, too.
Tank Bigsby, 43% on 207. Kenneth Walker, 43% on 263. Breece Hall, 42.3% on 253. He's just, I mean, it's hard to get more efficient than he is. And whenever he leaves, we might get another year of him here at Kentucky.
Yeah.
But whenever he leaves, that's really going to be missed. And I think people aren't really going to realize that.
Until it's, yeah.
You might, the next back might be more explosive, but you're going to find yourself in a lot more second and eights and put more pressure on your quarterback. Like, what they've had the last 2 years with him has really been quite special to get that type of efficiency at the running back position.
He wasn't tired.